I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. 3 years after the fall of the Taliban, Afghanistan is grappling with some very complex media challenges. In October, its journalists covered their country's first democratic elections, but just last month, cable TV was temporarily banned in Kabul due to a controversy over the broadcast of what was deemed un-Islamic programming. Joining me now are John Newstrom, Afghanistan director for the Internews Network, and he is in Washington, and Ahmed Rashid, a Pakistani journalist based in Lahore, who has covered Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Central Asia for the past 25 years for such publications as the Far Eastern Economic Review, the Daily Telegraph, and the Wall Street Journal. I'm very pleased to welcome them both to my show, or we're going to welcome them to the show, but one of the problems you have when you do things like this with long-distance calls is sometimes the phone lines go dead, and you just heard that happen. We will be contacting them in just a moment, but I don't know how much you've been following this story. This is the sort of thing that we talk about on this underreported series, because at most you will know one or two things based on perhaps a little article in the back of a newspaper or a mention on the broadcast news, but we have an opportunity here to devote a fair amount of time to a story as complex as this in a country that is so important to us, because Afghanistan, of course, is a country that we invaded right after the 9/11 attack. And we go now to Ahmed Rashid. Mr. Rashid, how much do Afghans rely on the media for their news?
Well, enormously. I mean, this is a country and a people who've been at war for 25 years, and they know they are extremely politicized. And the main source of news, of course, has been the radio. The BBC, the Voice of America, Radio Liberty, all these stations have been providing news in the three main Afghan languages, Persian, Pashto, and Uzbek, you know, for the last two decades. And the advent of new radio stations, FM radio stations in the major cities, now a Radio Afghanistan, which is available around the country, all this is only increased the appetite for radio.
Now, we've heard only about the banning of cable TV. How accessible is television to the general public? I've seen estimates that only about 100,000 households have TVs.
Cable TV is limited by the lack of electricity in Afghanistan, simply. People are running TV sets in major cities do not have 24 hours power. Even Kabul, most of Kabul has only power for about half the day. And other cities don't have power at all. So people are running TVs off battery sets, off cars, or, you know, running their Jeep engines. And so it's very, very difficult. But cable TV, wherever there is electricity, is spreading very, very fast. There's an enormous appetite for it. Kabul certainly has a cable network, and it's very, very popular. People spend their life savings on buying a small TV set. But really, the watchability of it depends on, when power is available.
Well, last month's ban by the Afghan Supreme Court on cable television wasn't a particularly promising step, was it? They said that it was prompted by complaints from the public because audiences were offended by Western music, videos, provocative Bollywood films, even the broadcast of Charlton Heston in The Ten Commandments.
Yes, I mean, there has been this ongoing tussle, both in the cabinet and between the Supreme Court and the government. For example, the Minister of Culture has, generally speaking, been quite liberal, but the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is extremely conservative, and has taken various measures against a free media in the past also. So, you know, I think cable TV is back and running now, but this is a tussle that's going to go on. And Karzai, the President Hamid Karzai, has not come down decisively on the side of the liberals, and this is perhaps upsetting a lot of people. But I think what he's seeing is that he can't afford to right now, given that there are still very powerful and important voices within the conservative camp.
I've heard that one of the reasons they decided to put cable back on is because the alternative is people going to satellite dishes, and you can control cable content, but you can't control satellite content.
Well, that's absolutely true, but of course satellite is much more expensive. To cable, you just have to pay $1 or $2, literally, I mean a month, to the cable operator, and he gives you 20, 30 channels in your house. Setting up a satellite dish costs a lot more money. People in the middle class can afford it, but most of the population can't.
John Newstrom, you have been working with broadcasters in Afghanistan, radio and television?
Mainly radio. We do some work with television, but not that much. As you had just heard, television hasn't had that big of an impact. It's starting to have a bigger one.
And Ahmed said that one of the reasons radio is so popular is because of literacy rates. But I'd imagine there are lots of reasons. The poor infrastructure, few schools. Radio can serve a huge need by broadcasting educational material. I understand they even broadcast farming techniques to help increase productivity.
Absolutely. There's a pretty wide range of information that goes out. Some of it would be pretty boring to us, it would seem. But on the other hand, no, it's very, very, very important. And there's also a lot of community action that happens. People go into the local radio station. They write letters. You can't believe these letters that come into the radio station. Some of them are works of art. I mean, they have drawings, beautiful calligraphy. They're just gorgeous.
Is print journalism starting to have any impact in Afghanistan?
No. Two reasons. Very low circulation. The biggest circulation paper in the entire country is 50,000.
So how national are radio and TV? Are they centralized or are they local, considering the fact that the country has so many different ethnic groups, different language groups, is divided between Sunnis and Shiites?
Well, this is part of the challenge of doing radio, and what Internews has done with the help of USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, sorry for the plug, but it's important to know that we're doing that. What we've got 25 radio stations across the country, and we feed a hour and a half long program that would sound a lot like All Things Considered an American audience if they could understand the language. And part of what we're trying to do with that is if you just set up local radio stations, then you have the possibility of Afghanistan fracturing. If you have a national program that comes out and mixes the languages, literally on Salam Watan Dar, which translates as hello citizen, it's in Dari and Pashtun, and it kind of flows between. It isn't one sentence in Dari and the next sentence in Pashtun. It flows. Each sentence could start in one language and end in another. And the idea of this is to build an Afghanistan.
Well, Ahmed, there is a lot of local broadcasting nonetheless, isn't there?
Of course.
And what happens locally? After all, my picture of Afghanistan is that each area is being controlled by a warlord. Do they wind up deciding what kind of content is broadcast in their area?
Well, the issue of warlordism has come down in the last few months because two or three of the top warlords have actually been thrown out by President Karzai. But I think, you know, what Internews has done, setting up these FM stations, I mean, they have trained young people, educated people to run these radio stations. Now, a few of them certainly perhaps are under control of commanders or warlords. But the majority, and I know some of them outside Kabul, they've been very brave. They've taken on issues, public interest issues like drugs and issues that actually harm the reputation and prestige of local warlords. There has been Internews and other aid agencies provide content, because of course the big thing is that these smaller FM stations, which are run by two or three people, can't provide the kind of hours and hours of radio content. They can't even provide music because out in the boondocks they don't have the music tapes or the CDs to be playing songs, etc. So what these NGOs do is to provide news content, music content, drama, talk shows, etc., made up centrally from Kabul. And then these smaller stations have slots whereby they can give local news and have local talk shows. So it's patchwork, but it's been extraordinarily successful. And all these FM stations in these small towns, I mean, if you imagine, Afghanistan has 6 or 7 major cities, but these FM stations have been put up in over 30 locations, which includes, of course, small towns, and they're very, very popular there.
John, hasn't your organization begun monitoring cases of harassment over the past several months?
Well, yes, we try to keep track of that. It's been surprisingly light, though. If anything, the biggest problem for journalists is self-censorship. Again, the warlords are a problem. There's one station that actually, ironically enough, a couple of warlords were fighting over who should control the radio station. But this fighting, and I don't necessarily mean just, you know, people in the street with guns, but also just trying to struggle for political power. But the radio station stayed in the eye of the hurricane. No one came into the station. No one tried to take it over, that kind of thing. But they were able to continue the dialogue with the community. And so the station kind of took a neutral position and succeeded.
But self-censorship is always a problem. And isn't part of the problem also that most cases of intimidation won't get reported?
Yes.
For fear that reporting them will only increase tensions and encourage retaliation.
Of course. And self-censorship is a big problem. It is a huge problem all around. And that's going to take time for the country to stabilize. But meanwhile, it starts in little tiny ways. You know, maybe the community will get together and start talking about the quality of education on the air, which has nothing to do with the warlords or anything else that's going on, but they can start that discussion and realize that the radio is a place that they can do that.
Am I being overly cynical when I wonder whether a decrease in threatening incidents might actually mean that journalists are getting better at censoring themselves, not that respect for journalism is gaining ground?
That's exactly what we're trying to find out. We're working on a project now called the Media Monitor, and we have a research team in the field who will be going out next month and trying to look at that very question.
We have to take a little break here. We'll be back with my guest, John Newstrom, Afghanistan director for the Internews Network, and Ahmed Rashid, a Pakistani journalist based in Lahore, who has worked for most of the major publications like the Far Eastern Economic Review, the British Daily Telegraph, and also our own Wall Street Journal. Stay with us. I'm Leonard Lopez, and this is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. My guests are Ahmed Rashid, a Pakistani journalist based in Lahore, and John Newstrom, Afghanistan director for the Internews Network. We're talking to him in Washington, and we're talking about the media in Afghanistan. There was a piece in the Christian Science Monitor recently that reported that some officials and citizens feel that after more than 2 decades of war, the society may not be ready to interpret correctly the values or concepts they suddenly see in movies from more carefree and stable societies like India and the West. Ahmed, has that been your observation?
I'm sorry, I couldn't catch the last bit.
Well, the feeling was that Western values may not, that Afghanis might not be ready to deal with some of the things that are now available to them after all of these years of war and then repression from the Taliban. Is it possible to advance Western values about freedom of information and expression and still stay within the bounds of what's acceptable to the Afghani people now and the Islamic values that they hold to?
Yes, I certainly think so. I mean, the fact that, there has been an election, 70 to 80% of the population took part. Radio played an enormous role in promoting the very idea of democracy and voting and explaining things to people. So in terms of, you know, human rights, women's rights, all these very, very important things, the media is playing a very, very big role. I think where the problem is, of course, where you come into sexuality and, if you like, the sort of promiscuousness that is in the West, which is not so prevalent in Afghanistan. And when you set up cable TV, of course, you import everything from MTV to, all the soap operas on American channels, etc. So that's the issue. But I think on the really important points of, if you like, Western values, I would call them international values of human rights and all the rights that pertain to becoming normal citizens and part of the global community, I think in that sense there is no contradiction, and Afghans certainly want to be a part of that.
Well, I've heard that there were complaints when even veiled women sang on television or were shown socializing with men. So that is a far cry from MTV. That is something that sounds to me like the legacy of the Taliban, who were particularly restrictive in these kinds of things.
That's true, but I don't think that that view would be supported by the majority of the people. I think the majority of the people, you know, want to see Afghan women appear on TV, read the news, do the weather, sing songs, etc. There are sections within the government, as I said, particularly the Supreme Court, which is still very, very conservative and which takes a view which is very close to the Taliban view, especially on the role of women. But I think, you know, people are pushing the envelope, these cable operators. There's a new TV, a private TV station that has just started in Kabul, which is now spreading to two or three other cities, Tolo TV. That is pushing the envelope. They're showing Hollywood movies, Indian movies, etc. They may be editing some of the more graphic sex scenes or something out of it, but they're certainly showing relationships between men and women, people falling in love, things like that. So the envelope is constantly being pushed, but it's a constant battle.
As long as they don't show sexy dance scenes, they're okay then. Are you, John, are you training women to handle these roles as part of your Internews program?
Absolutely. I also want to add something about what you were just talking about, too. But in terms of women, we've got 29% of our news staff, both in Kabul and in the radio stations, are women. And, you know, 4 years ago, there were 0% women in the workforce. So, yes, and I'm also proud to say that most of our training center, which is training the journalists, are the trainers are women, so that the journalists learn to accept information from women from the get-go.
Since the journalistic practices are based on Western methods and values, how have they translated into Afghanistan's new media culture?
Well, I think that, if anything, the tradition in Afghanistan is from the the state broadcaster, you know, radio, TV Afghanistan, radio being the bigger element. And one of the unfortunate things is that there is kind of a sense that if you are talking on the radio, you are an authority. So you need to speak in an authoritarian voice. And that's a little disheartening. I was kind of hoping that maybe I can get them to lighten up a little bit and realize that they're just talking to people. They don't need to worry about being the authority on the radio and I know what's going on kind of approach to things. So it is a little different. But, you know, they're very keen to find these things out. And the public, by the way, which kind of circles back to the earlier conversation, is really absorbing this information, to get away from the more of the stuff with dealing with the sex scenes and stuff. Let's take it a little bit more practical matter. The traditional Afghan way of dealing with a child with diarrhea is to put them on a fast. Don't feed them. Don't give them any water. They die because they dehydrate. So on the radio and out in the community, people are talking about how you should give your baby water and feed them during the period of diarrhea. And what's happening, we have found by doing research in the villages, is that people hear this on the radio, and the first thing they want to do is they'll hear it on their local radio station. They'll tune in on a shortwave and listen to the BBC. They'll listen to another radio station, maybe Voice of America or somebody else, and see if they can hear the same thing. Then they go into the village, and they'll maybe go to the health center and talk to a nurse or a doctor to see if this is true. And then they'll go check with a mullah or some other community leader to see if it's true. And if it is true, if they can get confirmation on all these different sources, they actually change their behavior and will start treating their babies with water and food when they have the diarrhea. So this means a pretty fundamental change in what could be considered a part of the culture of Afghanistan if they can check it with other places. So what's surprising to me is that the Afghan people in general are very pluralistic in their media consumption. They want confirmation from more than one source of what is going on in the world and what is happening and what they should do.
So, Ahmed, it sounds like most Afghans recognize the importance of having a free press, but are still not sure of what they can believe and what they can't believe.
Well, I think that's true. And I think, you know, I mean, we should remember that this is a country that, you know, did not have a free press or a free media for two decades and had no media whatsoever for the 6 years under the Taliban. And one of the big problems in both radio and print, for example, has been actually training journalists, because the only journalists available are those who were the spokesmen or the journalists working for warlords or for various factions.
So they only understood propaganda.
Exactly. They only understood propaganda, and you actually have to tell a journalist, well, look, you're not a propagandist now, you're actually a journalist, and being a journalist means something else. And, you know, this is a big problem. This is why training and, you know, what the NGOs are doing there, I think, has been so very important. I mean, an entire culture of media and journalism has to be reimplanted, if you like, in Afghanistan for the first time in 25 years. And it's not an easy job to do.
I am talking with Ahmed Rashid, a Pakistani journalist who's based in Lahore, and with John Newstrom, Afghanistan director for the Internews Network. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Ahmed, I understand that you have to leave at some point. Just do it whenever you feel it's absolutely necessary. Can we continue a bit more?
Yeah.
You mentioned that things were very different under the Taliban. They destroyed printing presses, didn't they?
Well, certainly. They had one newspaper that they used to publish about once a week, which was just full of verses from the Quran and other things, and which gave absolutely no news. But they did not allow any kind of media to operate. They didn't allow any music on the radio, for example, and radio was just full of sermons and mullahs making speeches. Television was completely banned. This lasted for 6 years, so it's a very, very long period. Most Afghan journalists fled to either Pakistan or Iran, but even there, they were working normally in propaganda outfits, party outfits. Very few were running proper magazines or newspapers.
So how do you teach the public to look to radio and television and the press to find unbiased news?
Well, the public actually, you know, because of the enormous influence of these international radio stations like the BBC and Voice of America, the public is kind of used to the idea of proper news, and they take proper news very seriously. The public doesn't really have to be educated as much as perhaps the journalists do in being able to formulate that news and present it properly. And the public has been very, very receptive to any of these initiatives, whether it's in print or in radio, that have come out. And in fact, you know, the public is constantly pushing the envelope. And I don't mean here just the conservatives who are trying to block it, but broadly speaking, the public, you know, in their letter writing and their appeals to the radio stations as to what to run, what songs to run, what they want to listen to and hear, the public has been playing a very positive role in kind of pushing the envelope.
How did the media function before the Taliban came to power? We've seen a succession of different governments going all the way back to the king. Was there ever a free press in Afghanistan?
Well, not really. I mean, before in the king's time, that was before the king was Zahir Shah was deposed in 1973. There was a very limited free press, but there was a lot of self censorship, and literacy rates at that time were even lower. Radio Kabul and Kabul TV, the state-run radio and TV stations, were nationwide, and they were very popular, and there were songs, and women would appear, and so there is that historical memory there. Then, of course, you had the 10 long years in the 1980s of the communist regime, where, again, there was a lot of media, but it was mostly propaganda. And TV and radio and newspapers were functioning, but it was all communist propaganda, much of it run by the Soviets themselves, who were occupying Afghanistan. And you then had a 5-6 years of civil war in which there were several governments operating at the same time around Afghanistan. They all had their propaganda magazines or leaflets or even weekly newspapers, but really no journalism at all. And then you had this complete period of darkness with the Taliban.
Has media law been written now under the new regime?
Well, yes, I mean, there is a media law, but it's still not very clear, and it's still being disputed between the government and the Supreme Court, the conservatives on the Supreme Court.
Who is working most to change the way journalists work, John? Is it organizations like yours? Are there other NGOs also involved?
Yes, there are. There are quite a few. We do training. A Canadian organization called IMPACTS does training. The Institute for War and Peace Reporting has a training center also. So there's quite a bit of training going on, generally in various areas. Like IMPACTS is mainly working with women, and IWPR is working in print and a news agency.
So except for things with sexual content, is there pretty much freedom of press in Afghanistan now?
Well, again, you had the self-censorship issue, and the troubling thing about the media law is there is a provision in the law that makes it illegal to do anything that is anti-Islamic, but the problem is, what does that mean?
So that can be interpreted differently according to what court you go to.
Well, don't forget also that in Afghanistan, under the law, the courts do not need to have a case come before them. That's what the Supreme Court ruling was about with the cable. That was not a case brought to them. They just made this declaration based on whatever they wanted to base it on.
There is also another problem, isn't there? The problem that you run into everywhere, and that's where do you get the money to do all of this? In Afghanistan, the economy has been very weak for all sorts of reasons. A drought on top of the Taliban's oppressive rule. Now, 60% of the economy, as I understand it, is based on opium. So who is paying for the changes in the Afghani press? Ahmad?
Well, you know, obviously the NGOs have been playing a huge role, and not to blow my own trumpet, but, you know, after the success of my Taliban book, I started a print media NGO to give startup money for newspapers and magazines, and it's called the Open Media Fund for Afghanistan. It's doing very well. We're funding something like 14 different types of publications around the country in 3 different languages. And, you know, the assessment we made initially was that, well, we'll give this magazine startup money for 6 months, pay the salaries, pay the printing costs, and then presumably they'll become self-sufficient slowly. And actually, many of these magazines, 3 years down the road, we're still funding because they don't have the means to become self-sufficient. For example, advertising revenue is almost non-existent in the print media, apart from perhaps a few NGOs or UN agencies or embassies. Advertising revenue, sales are you know, are only enough to perhaps meet printing costs, but not salaries. So actually, you know, what has been happening, at least in the print media, is that they are still extremely dependent on foreign sources of funding, particularly through the NGOs.
And I understand that Pakistan Radio just gave two FM transmitters to Afghanistan. Now, there has been a troubled relationship between Pakistan and Afghanistan over the years, Pakistan supporting the Taliban. Do people trust Pakistan?
Well, I think, you know, immediately after 9/11 and the war, etc., there was a lot of mistrust a lot of suspicion about Pakistani intentions. But I think the situation is improving a lot. There's much more trade and business now between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Afghanistan, of course, is a landlocked country, so all its neighbors have a very important role to play, because the only ports that the Afghans can access to export and import are through either Iran or Pakistan. So all this has been helping. And Pakistan, along with other neighboring countries, does have an aid program for Afghanistan. Pakistan's commitment has been something like $100 million in aid to Afghanistan.
Now, Iran, you mentioned, another major neighbor, but connected with the Shiite minority in Afghanistan. How much of an influence do they have?
Iran has a considerable influence, but as you say, it's largely amongst the Shia minority in Afghanistan, that is the Hazaras in central Afghanistan, and western Afghanistan, in Herat, where Iran borders Afghanistan. And Iran is, as you know, the government there is divided between the more moderates running the official government and the hardliners who are in charge of the Revolutionary Guards. And Iran has had a kind of dual policy in Afghanistan. You've had the hardliners backing more fundamentalist groups, trying to create problems for the Americans and for Karzai. But I must say the moderates, the actual government in Tehran, has been, I think, very positive. They've had a very positive aid program. They have not tried to play favorites. They have helped the various political processes in Afghanistan, such as the recent elections.
John, how good a job did the press do reporting the October elections?
Well, of course, I have an unbiased opinion in saying that I think that we did very well. Internews was actually on the air via satellite for 12 hours during the elections. And what was very impressive is that there were a few brush fires that kind of came up with issues dealing with the elections. And those were immediately reported on and then quickly solved. I mean, I can't say that the media was responsible per se, but certainly the media shined a light on it and got some of the solutions, you know, to be put in place faster. I mean, certainly there was the embarrassment of seeing international journalists standing in front of polling places complaining that there's no ink. And so, you know, some of those cases got solved because there was an international journalist there. But it also got solved when there were Afghan journalists reporting on it.
Well, there is always the problem that foreign journalists have their own biases, don't they? So objectivity becomes a confusing thing in a situation like Afghanistan.
Well, it does, and it's a hard thing to teach, but there are, of course, ways to do it. But the elections was interesting because the excitement for the elections, I would have to say, was over the process, and that the process of having an election was just fascinating.
Ahmed Rashid, what do you see in the future for Afghanistan? Do you see a freer press than in most countries in the area?
I certainly see a freer press in Afghanistan because there's just a huge public demand for it. If you look at radio or TV or print media, you know, people want to be informed. People, you know, literally, I mean, as far as newspapers are concerned, people have had nothing to read for 10 years. I mean, it's a very naive statement to make, but it's very, very true. I mean, a copy of a newspaper is passed around from house to house, from students to students. You know, it's read by dozens, if not hundreds of people, simply because there's such a hunger to read. One of the magazines, for example, we started funding was a magazine for school children. Now, you've got about 5 million children in school, They've been helped by the Americans, by the UN agencies with textbooks. But there's absolutely nothing to read in these schools. None of these, or hardly any of these schools, have a library, for example. So one of the big efforts there is to try and create reading material for children, which is not just school stuff, but, you know, cartoons and games and fun kind of stuff, which any Western child would take as being very normal. Children go home, they have nothing to look at except their textbooks. And so there's just this huge hunger for print media, for things to read and things to listen to. For the first time now, you've got women sitting at home, doing their chores, listening to these FM radio stations in some of the most obscure areas in the country, where previously they had absolutely nothing to listen to except the BBC at night. So now the fact that they've got an FM station that runs during the day, that runs your typical kind of housewife type of programs and healthcare and stuff like that during the day, just like any other Western station would, has made a huge difference.
Just one more thing. Films like Osama are starting to be made in Afghanistan. They make a big splash in the West. Do they get a lot of attention in the country as well? Have either of you seen that film?
I have not seen it.
But there are a number of films that have come out of Afghanistan in the last couple of years, all critical of the Taliban and the terrible excesses of the past. Do people go to movies, or do they have to rely on cable TV to see films? I guess neither of you know.
Well, actually, what I was going
to
say...
People do go to movies. I mean, you know, new movies, there were cinemas in Kabul before and in the other cities, and they're actually being refurbished. Some of the money has come in from some of these expatriate Afghans living in America or France or Germany, and they're actually, these cinemas are being refurbished. Osama has actually shown in Kabul, has been shown in Kabul, in a regular cinema to packed, absolutely packed, and it's being shown constantly there. And people are very proud of it, not necessarily just because it's about the Taliban, but the fact that this is an Afghan film made by Afghans for Afghans.
I want to thank you both so much for talking with us. Ahmed Rashid is a Pakistani journalist based in Lahore, and he wrote a best-selling book about the Taliban. And John Newstrom is the Afghanistan director for the Internews Network. It's been a real pleasure talking to you today as part of our underreported series.
Great to talk to you.